You rely on Wisconsin Public Radio for independent journalism and refreshing entertainment. WPR is listener-supported, and when you give, you make the programs you value possible. Donate now at wpr.org/donate.
Hey, if you're wondering why this popped up in your podcast feed today, let us remind you why we're here.
This is a podcast about redistricting in Wisconsin. It's a process that political parties anticipate every decade. And once it starts, it sometimes feels like it's never going to end.
We started this podcast last September, right before the state legislature introduced its new maps.
And it's been almost 6 months since our last update. 6 months, and a lot of non-redistricting news has happened since then. So maybe we should start with a refresher.
In November, Republicans in the Wisconsin legislature passed their new maps.
A week later, Democratic Governor Tony Evers vetoed them, sending the fight to the state Supreme Court.
The Supreme Court said it would choose a map based on a measure it called least changes. That is, it wanted to make the least changes to the map Republicans drew in 2011.
And that is where we left things. It was kind of tempting to say, game over, Republicans win. All they had to do was submit a least changes map to a conservative Supreme Court. Easy, right?
Other groups submitted their versions of least changes maps. There were maps from Democratic voters, from community groups, from mathematicians. Even the governor submitted a brand new set of maps.
But you know who didn't submit a new map? The legislature. They stuck with the one they passed in the fall, the one that got vetoed.
And it kind of begged the question, why would they do that? Why push ahead with the map that was already rejected by the governor? Why ignore instructions from the state's highest court?
Well, it doesn't matter, because in the end, the strategy would pay off.
From WPR Reports, I'm Sean Johnson.
And I'm Bridget Bowden. This is Mapped Out.
So like we were saying, the Wisconsin Supreme Court considered maps from a lot of different people. In January, they each had a chance to make their case before the justices.
Good morning on this nice, crisp Wisconsin morning. The case we have on for hearing today is Johnson versus Wisconsin Election Commission et al.
The court met for hours that day, and while they covered a lot of ground, the topic of least changes came up repeatedly. Lawyer after lawyer told justices their map was the most least. Here's Tamara Packard, a lawyer for Wisconsin State Senate Democrats, who aren't exactly excited about the whole least changes thing.
Had the court chosen to allow more leeway to the parties, I guarantee you we would not have proposed the map that we did. But we proposed the map that we did because we followed the court's order. We followed the least changes approach.
And Anthony Russomano, a State Department of Justice lawyer representing Democratic Governor Tony Evers.
Your Honors, it's undisputed in this litigation that the governor's maps make the least changes to the existing, no matter how you slice it.
Now, we should say here, Russomano is not talking about the map Evers endorsed as part of his People's Maps Commission. That map failed in the legislature, and Evers pretty much abandoned it.
And in its place, drew a new map, one that was clearly designed to meet the court's least change mandate. By the numbers, it moved the fewest people from one district to another. In redistricting speak, its core retention score was the best.
Of course, that's important here because of this court's November 30th decision, where the court said that was its primary concern. That is the measure that keeps the court out of the fray, and that was the measure the parties were instructed to meet.
Now, remember, the Republican legislature decided not to submit a new map, one that was drawn specifically with least change in mind. Why not?
The legislature's attorney, Taylor Meehan, got a chance to answer that question in an exchange with Justice Rebecca Dallet. Meehan said, there's different ways of defining least change.
The legislature's plan optimizes population equality, it optimizes municipal splits, and it optimizes least changes.
Right. If it doesn't optimize least change, you have to admit you're not the least change.
No, Your Honor, we fundamentally disagree with that. A least changes measure.
So to sum up, the legislature says it's still a least change map because the population of its districts is closer to equal and it splits fewer municipalities. They say it's okay that they're not the best when it comes to moving people around, to core retention.
But there were signs that the key justice in this case, conservative swing justice Brian Hagedorn, wasn't buying that argument.
So I'm having a hard time understanding why we would now use that standard when that isn't what we told the parties. If we told the parties we wanted you to submit maps that have perfect equality population like the congressional districts, we should have said so, but we didn't say so. We said something quite different, and I don't want to be Charlie Brown and Lucy here.
Say, Charlie Brown, I've got a football. How about practicing a few place kicks? I'll hold the ball, and you come running and kick it.
You must think I'm stupid.
Oh, come on, Charlie Brown.
No.
I'll hold it steady.
Charlie Brown and Lucy. You know, the characters from the old Peanuts cartoon.
You just want me to come running up to kick that ball so you can pull it away and see me land flat on my back and kill myself.
This time you can trust me. See? Here's a signed document testifying that I promise not to pull it away.
He gets a running start, and then...
Lucy pulls it away. Charlie Brown goes flying. The rules were changed at the last minute.
Peculiar thing about this document, it was never notarized.
Other conservative justices have no problems with the legislature's argument. They don't see it as Charlie Brown and Lucy.
But in this court of seven justices, Hagedorn's opinion matters the most. When it comes to political cases, the other three conservatives reliably stick together, and so do the court's three liberals.
Hagedorn is the tiebreaker. He's the only justice who's unpredictable. If you can persuade him, you have a good chance of winning your case. And about a month and a half after this hearing, Justice Brian Hagedorn does indeed write the majority opinion in Wisconsin's redistricting case.
He's joined by the court's three liberal justices, and this four-justice majority picks the governor's maps. In this game of least changes, Evers has won.
The opinion Hagedorn authors is straightforward. He says the governor's map moves the fewest number of people into new districts, and it's, quote, not a close call.
Hagedorn says the other parties to the case don't offer any other measures of least change that are better than the governor's. He says the governor's assembly map is, quote, vastly superior.
So that's the majority opinion. And at this moment in early March, that opinion is effectively the law of the land in Wisconsin.
The other three conservative justices dissent from Hagedorn, writing opinions that take him to task.
Annette Ziegler, the court's chief justice, calls Hagedorn's opinion, quote, an exercise of judicial activism.
Justice Rebecca Bradley writes, quote, Justice Hagedorn may have cast the deciding vote in this case, but he does not have the power to act as a Supreme Court of one.
And Justice Patience Rogensack takes it a step further. She says it's her hope that the United States Supreme Court will be asked to review the case.
And that is a pretty big deal. The state Supreme Court is normally the court of last resort in Wisconsin. The decisions they issue are final. For a justice to ask another court to step in and overturn them is practically unheard of.
The very next day, a lawyer for Republicans announced they would appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. More on that after the break.
Some prosecutors really shine in the courtroom, but that's not the whole story.
Man, this guy's really good, boy. Look at the convictions he's getting. Well, that was before we knew some of the crap he was pulling under the table.
Listen to Open and Shut, a new investigative podcast from Wisconsin Watch and WPR about the power of the prosecutor and what can happen if that power goes unchecked. Go to WPR.org/openandshut or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, at this point in time, nobody really knows what the U.S. Supreme Court is going to do. Because the court doesn't have to do anything. They could just ignore this plea from Wisconsin Republicans like they do with so many other appeals.
But for this case, the U.S. Supreme Court is paying attention. And about 3 weeks after Hagedorn chose the governor's maps, the court steps in and reverses the decision. Evers' victory is short-lived.
Why did the court take such a dramatic step? Because of the Federal Voting Rights Act, the VRA.
Look, we're going to level with you. We find the Voting Rights Act, as it pertains to redistricting, to be complicated. And that's an understatement.
What makes it complicated? Decades of case law, which is not always clearly defined. A lot of math. And what one party says is good for minority voters, another party might say is straight up racist.
When you read Voting Rights Act redistricting decisions, it's easy to get lost in some of the minutiae. You're supposed to start with a three-part test. You consider the totality of the circumstances. VRA cases live and die by this stuff.
And it's not just semantics. There's a reason this law exists in the first place. Marquette University law professor Atiba Ellis is an expert on the VRA.
I think to understand that story, we first have to understand the kind of nature of the racial apartheid that the VRA was designed to fix. And in a way, this takes us all the way back to Reconstruction.
In Ellis's view, a lot of today's political challenges stem from this period in history after the U.S. Civil War. Freed slaves were given rights, but they were incomplete, and new laws were passed that took Black people's rights away.
The Voting Rights Act of 1965 was passed as a response to this, an effort to right the country's wrongs.
So the idea is that the Voting Rights Act allows for minority citizens to fully enjoy participation in the political process.
When it comes to redistricting, the VRA can be used to protect those rights in a couple ways. It can be used as a justification for drawing maps a certain way. Mapmakers can draw more majority-minority districts to ensure minority voters get to elect who they want.
The VRA can also be used after maps are drawn to try to overturn them. If minority voters think they've been packed or cracked by a redistricting plan, they can sue. And courts can and do redraw maps based on these claims.
But whether you're being proactive or reactive, the U.S. Supreme Court has said you have to be careful about when you use the VRA. If you give race too much weight, the court has said, you might violate the U.S. Constitution's guarantee of equal protection, the 14th Amendment.
This is where the U.S. Supreme Court says the Wisconsin Supreme Court got it wrong. The governor's map, the one Brian Hagedorn picked, created an additional majority-minority district in Milwaukee.
Hagedorn said he thought there were good reasons to believe that the district was needed, but his opinion didn't say much about why. Ellis says that was the weakness of Hagedorn's ruling.
What the U.S. Supreme Court basically argued was, look, you didn't walk through these factors in sufficient detail for us to determine whether there was a violation.
In a 7-2 unsigned opinion, the U.S. Supreme Court sent the case back to Wisconsin. Ellis says the court essentially ruled that Hagedorn needed to show his work.
Now, at this point in late March, there's still a chance the governor's plan could prevail. So Evers' lawyers get to work. They tell the Wisconsin Supreme Court they could resubmit their map and show their work this time.
Or they could submit a similar map and only adjust the Milwaukee districts.
The legislature disputes this. They tell the court that the governor shouldn't get another chance.
They say the only answer to this problem is a map that is race neutral, one that doesn't consider race at all.
And who has been saying that their map is race neutral since the beginning? The legislature.
In fact, at the public hearing on the legislature's map, only two people testified in favor: Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and Republican Senate Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu. And they both stressed a key point about how the maps were drawn.
These employees were instructed not to consider race when drafting the legislative maps.
The new maps were drafted without the use of race data at any point in the process to ensure compliance with the 14th Amendment.
In hindsight, Voss and LeMahieu chose their words very carefully that day. They were laying the groundwork for when this inevitably went to court.
But Marquette Law's Atiba Ellis sees a troubling trend.
The Voting Rights Act in and of itself is about being race conscious.
For Ellis, the worst case scenario is that courts put so much emphasis on race neutrality that the Voting Rights Act itself is declared unconstitutional and its protections for minority voters go away.
But in the short term, the race-neutral argument persuades the Wisconsin Supreme Court. On April 15th, the day candidates for the legislature are scheduled to begin circulating nominating petitions to run in the new districts, the court issues a final decision.
Four justices pick the legislature's map. Brian Hagedorn is one of them. Hagedorn does not write the majority opinion in this ruling, but he does write a short four-page concurrence. He says he didn't think the court's earlier order choosing the governor's maps was based on a Voting Rights Act argument. But once the U.S. Supreme Court said what it said, and with time running out, Hagedorn says the legislature's map was, quote, the remaining option.
University of Wisconsin-Madison law professor and redistricting expert Rob Yablon disputes that.
Even at that late stage, I do think it's an exaggeration to say that there weren't any other options that were available.
Yablon says the Wisconsin Supreme Court could have taken more evidence. They could have reconfigured the Milwaukee districts. They could have drawn a whole new map. These are things courts do, Yablon says.
But instead, the Wisconsin Supreme Court adopted the legislature's map wholesale, without changes. The same map that the governor vetoed and the court itself rejected the first time.
After the opinion came out, Yablon analyzed how the final Wisconsin map compared to other court-drawn maps across the country over the past 20 years. He compared them based on several metrics that measure partisanship. He says the maps endorsed by the Wisconsin Supreme Court are in a league of their own.
These maps really stand out as being maps that look exactly like a very strong partisan gerrymander, the kind that you would expect from a legislature which was trying to tilt the playing field in its favor. And of course, that's what this legislature was trying to do. They were trying to reinforce and perpetuate the gerrymander that they had adopted a decade ago. And ultimately, they got the Wisconsin Supreme Court to sign off on that.
Of course, that all assumes that this map is the final, final map. That this 2021 least changes version of the 2011 map will live on through this decade and beyond. And it might.
But remember, Wisconsin's Supreme Court justices are elected, and their terms last 10 years.
Justice Patience Rogensack's term is up in 2023, and she's part of the court's 4-3 conservative majority. If a liberal justice wins that seat, Yablon says it would change the ideological balance of the court.
And if that court swings after an election, including an election in 2023, I think there's good reason to think that they will take another look at this map.
Right now, that's all hypothetical. Wisconsin's Republican-drawn least changes map is the law of the land for the 2022 elections.
But it's not just a carbon copy of the old map. Lines did move. Districts changed. We're not going to walk you through all of the changes, but we can give you one big picture outcome. There's basically no competition under this map.
And to be sure, there wasn't much competition under the old map either. But in some places, despite the best efforts of mapmakers, competition started to bloom. The population changed. People moved. Attitudes changed. And seats that were drawn to be safe became competitive. They were suddenly up for grabs.
This new map shut that down. And it's super apparent in one part of the Milwaukee suburbs.
What we are looking at right here is my district runs down 65th Street right here. And then behind us on Clark.
State Representative Robin Vining's Assembly District includes parts of Milwaukee and Waukesha counties. Historically, Waukesha has been hugely important to Wisconsin Republicans, the base of their power.
Vining's district used to be a part of that. For example, in 2014, Democrats didn't even field a candidate here. It was considered safely GOP.
But over the past decade, Milwaukee's suburbs have been changing. Vining, a Democrat, noticed this.
So back in 2018, we had started to notice a crack in the gerrymander.
Finding saw a growing block of Democratic voters in the district, particularly in her home of Wauwatosa. She thought if she could mobilize those voters, she could win the whole district.
And we looked at the math, and we saw that it was in striking distance. We saw it was possible.
And she was able to do something that no other Democrat had done before her under the 2011 map. Robin Vining flipped a district from red to blue, winning by just 138 votes.
I mean, it felt great. To them, this was a game. To us, it was personal. We wanted representation. We got it.
Initially, it seemed like Republican leaders viewed Vining's win as a fluke, not indicative of any pattern. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss told Republicans at the state GOP convention in 2019 that Vining's win would be short-lived.
We lost one seat last time to a woman who's going to be a one-termer. I'm not even going to tell you her name because she's going to lose.
And Vining remembers this.
When he called me a one-termer on May the 18th or 19th of 2019, yeah. I remember.
It turns out this win wasn't a fluke. In 2020, Vining won by 8 percentage points. Given what people had assumed about the district, it felt like a landslide.
How did Republicans address Robin Vining's district in the 2021 map? They gave it to her.
Under the new map, the Republican legislature's map, Vining's district becomes a safely Democratic seat. President Joe Biden would have won it by 23 percentage points.
Why would they turn around and draw a map that basically assures that if you want to stay in the legislature, you can?
Because they value winning over everything. They value party over everything.
How can conceding a seat to a Democrat mean Republicans value winning? The districts next to Vining's answer that question.
Like the one held by Democrat Sarah Rodriguez. She ran for the legislature in 2020 against a Republican incumbent.
And it was drawn to be a Republican district at the time. But as the 10 years have gone on, the district had changed. And I was able to...
Like Vining, Rodriguez seemingly beat the odds. She flipped the district, winning by just 735 votes. But unlike Vining, Republicans conceded nothing to Rodriguez in the new map.
Where she used to have parts of Milwaukee County, her new district is almost exclusively Waukesha County. By the numbers, it would be tougher for a Democrat to win here.
They carved out my district pretty dramatically and made it a huge change in how people were or who was going to represent them because they wanted to make it more red.
But by making these changes in the map, Republicans scored a two-for-one deal. By packing Democratic voters into Vining's district, Republicans could afford to make Rodriguez's district more red. They did the same thing with an adjacent GOP district that was becoming more competitive.
And by doing all of that, they protected a Republican Senate seat that was trending Democratic.
Now that the legislature's map is final, what will elections look like?
Out of 99 assembly districts, only 3 are projected to be within 2 percentage points. Only 3. The rest have basically been decided before a single vote is cast.
Mapped Out is reported by Bridget Bowden.
And Sean Johnson. We're produced by Brad Kohlberg. Edited by Noah Ovshinsky. Music by Carl Christensen. Additional support from Adam Friedrich.
Digital editing by Alyssa Alamand. And digital direction by David Hyland. Photography by Angela Major. Artwork by John Nichols.
You can see more at wpr.org/mappedout.